Genesis chapter 30, starting verse 25 is where we are this evening. It's 34 in our lessons. So, what are we doing this evening? Jacob decides it's time to leave his uncle and go back home. And, of course, that's going to raise some contention and some problems between Jacob and his uncle, because his uncle's going to have other ideas, as you might suspect. So in verse 25 and 26, we begin in Genesis chapter 30, it came to pass when Rachel had borne Jacob, or I'm sorry, had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away, that I may go on to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. So Jacob wants to go home, and because he has fulfilled his 14 years of obligation that he has served Laban. Of course, he had agreed to the original 7 years for his wife Rachel, and been originally tricked, and found out that he was married to Leah first, and then of course he got Rachel for an additional 7 years of service to Laban, and he of course held that against both Leah and probably against his uncle Laban for deceiving him for that that trickery. Of course, as you know, Jacob is a little bit of a trickster himself, and prides himself in deceiving, not in being deceived, but in being the deceiver. He was the one who deceived Esau and deceived his father. But of course, the consequences of deceiving have come back to haunt him. But meanwhile, Laban has prospered for 14 years because of Jacob's presence, and that primarily because the blessing of God has been with Jacob. We discussed that last week, or might have been on Sunday, that even though Jacob was outside, has been outside of the promised land, he's not living in the land that's been promised to him and to his seed through the covenant of God. He's outside of that, living in Haran with his uncle Laban. Still, the promises of God are with Jacob, and the presence of God is with Jacob, and the protection and all those things are of God, are with Jacob. So even though Jacob is not in the word and will of God at the moment, he is still benefiting from God's presence and all those things. So Laban has prospered because of Jacob's presence, and he knows that. And so Laban, you know, hears this news that Jacob wants to leave. And of course, the first thing in Laban's mind is, I don't want Jacob to go anywhere. You know, it's just like having a business and your best employee announcing, well, I'm going to retire, or I'm going to go work for another company or something like that. Well, the first thing that crosses your mind is, what can I do to get him to change his mind and to keep that person? And that's exactly what Laban, is thinking immediately, except that Laban wants to con Jacob basically into staying, and if there's a way that he can find to keep Jacob on, he's going to do it. And verse 27, and Laban says unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. So Laban tells Jacob that he knows that the Lord has blessed, he's been blessed because Jacob's been there. And so he's saying that, you know, God has blessed me and all that because you are here. So Laban figures that he can get the best of Jacob again because he did it before. Of course, You know, Jacob made a deal with Laban saying, I'll work for you, for the hand of Rachel, I'll work 7 years, and at the end of the 7 years, I'll take Rachel for my wife. And Laban, being ambiguous about the language, says, well, I'd rather her marry you than anyone else. He never really agreed to the terms, and so not being specific about the agreement, he tossed Rachel in bed with Jacob, and Jacob ended up with the older daughter as wife. And so Laban figures, well, I got the better of him one time, I can probably do it again. And so Laban says, he named his terms the first time, I'm going to let him do it again. And that's exactly what he does in verse 28. Laban says, appoint to me thy wages, and I will give it. In other words, name your terms, whatever they are, and I will let you have whatever you want. So Jacob is going to make the case that he has in fact brought the Lord's blessing and prosperity on Laban, and that has made him a rich man. And so Jacob, because he's made Laban rich, that's all well and good and everything, but Jacob now has two wives, or rather four wives, I suppose you might say, because each wife has a handmaid that was given to Jacob as a wife, and he now has 11 children, if you were counting, and there's 11 children that were born. The 12th is still yet to be born on the way to Bethlehem, but there's 11 children, but meanwhile, the thing that's lacking is any wealth of any kind. He has no possession of any real kind. And so one of the things that Jacob is concerned about, as any good father would be, is providing for his own. And he's provided for Laban and for his house, but he has nothing of his own to provide for his own family. And so Jacob, in verse 29 and 30, says, he said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. Now, before we move on, the word cattle here, when we think of cattle here in the English language, of course, what we think about are cows. You know, milk cows and beef cows, and we go to the grocery store and buy hamburger patties and all that. But cattle, in the King James Bible, oftentimes the word is a little different. Cattle is sometimes and oftentimes generic for just farm animal, basically. So don't necessarily associate the word cattle with a cow. It doesn't have to be that. And you will find that out here very quickly, that cattle and cow is not always associated together. Cattle is just going to be a generic term for livestock. So how the cattle, the livestock, you know, the herd was with me, for it was little which thou hadst before I came. And so Laban had some, but he didn't have a tremendous amount. It was well with him, if you remember. Jacob had asked the shepherd there at the well how Laban was doing before he got there, and the shepherd said, well, it's well with him and everything. You know, he's not a poor man. He's not destitute or anything. So he had provision for his family and everything, but he was not, he wasn't king of the hill. He wasn't renowned throughout all the land for being the wealthiest man. But things have changed, for it was little which thou hadst before I came, and now is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for mine own house also? So Laban's wealth has increased greatly. He had a little, now he has a multitude. But Jacob is concerned for his own provision, for his own family. He doesn't have anything to call his own. All he's been working for was for the dowry, first of all, for the first 7 years, it turned out, was a dowry for Leah, who he didn't even want. And the second 7 years was the dowry or the payment for Rachel, who he thought he had bargained for in the first 7 years of work. So he was just paying off wives. And it's like going to college and paying off student loans, except this was paying for women. And so he's worked 14 years and gotten no wages. He's just gotten wives and children. And so he's done with that. And he says, well, send me on my way because I need to start making a living for myself and increasing my wealth. But now it's let's make a deal time, according to Laban. He says, well, stay around and maybe I can help you out. So, Laban says, well, you tell me what you want and I will give it to you. So, Jacob, being the tricky guy that he is, the trickster that he is, and the deceiver that he is, knows that there are rare animals in the flock. And some animals are very common. When it comes to goats, for instance, most, I don't know if you know much about goats, but most goats are brown and black, dark brown and black. And when it comes to sheep, what color are most sheep? White, exactly right. Most sheep are white. You see a flock of sheep and they're all white. So that's the common colors of goats and the common colors of sheep. So, and you're going to find out here that that's exactly what we're talking about is sheep and goats. As far as cattle go, we're not really talking about cows. And the passages here will clear up any speculation as to what animals we're really talking about. But meanwhile, we're talking about sheep and goats. So Jacob knows that the normal coloration of animals is brown and black for the goats, and the sheep are normally white. And so he says to Laban, Laban says, what shall I give thee? Verse 31. And Jacob says, thou shalt not give me anything. In other words, I don't want you to give me anything. If thou wilt do this for me, I will again feed and keep thy flocks. In other words, I don't want you to give me anything, but I want you to do something for me. And if you'll do that, what I'll do is I'll earn that which I get. So I will keep your flock for you if for what I get. So I don't want you to give me anything. So you can't say, well, whatever you have, I gave to you. So, and that's a pretty good policy. Jacob was smart about that because if someone gives you something, it's different than if you earn it. Because if someone gives you something, then you're indebted to them. You notice in verse 28, Laban says, appoint me thy wages and I will give it. Well, if Jacob says, well, give me this. Well, would Jacob have earned it at that point? The answer is no, because for 14 years he was working for Laban, but he was working to pay off his debt for the wives. So to that point, he hadn't worked for anything else. Laban would have given him a gift that he had not earned. And so Laban could have said, well, I have given this to you, and now you owe me for what I have given you. So Jacob didn't want that situation. And so Jacob says, I don't want you to give me anything. Whatever I acquire, I'm going to earn. And then, so that's exactly what's going on here. He says, I don't want you to give me anything, but I want you to do something for me. I want you to make this agreement. I will feed your sheep and your flock. I'll keep watch over your flock. And verse 32, I will pass through all thy flock today. So I'm going to go through all your flock and removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle. So all the speckled and spotted animals that are in your flock, I'm going to take out. And all the brown cattle from among the sheep. So you see how cattle is, you know, there's not cows in the sheep flock. There's a cattle is just used as a term for animals, for livestock. So if normal coloration of sheep is white, well, occasionally there's a black sheep or a brown sheep or a sheep with a spot on it or what have you, a speckled sheep born, and also the spotted and speckled among the goats. And if such shall be my hire, that'll be my wages for keeping your flock, in other words, Jacob says. So, of course, that would be wonderful. And that's going to be the vast minority of the animals, isn't it? Because you look at a big flock of sheep, and you look over me and think, wow, there's a lot of white sheep out there. And then 1,000 sheep, they're all white except for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 might have a speckle or a spot, or, you know, and then it's the rare one that's a black sheep, you know, the black sheep of the family, the saying, you know. There's a brown one every now and then. So it's the rare genetic mutation is what it amounts to that Jacob wants. And he says in verse 33, so shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come. So in other words, it's going to keep me honest. When it shall come for my hire before thy face, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that should be counted stolen with me. In other words, in the flock that I have, if there's any that are white sheep, or if there's any goats that aren't speckled or spotted or anything like that, then obviously I stole them. So it's going to keep me honest as far as the animals go. And Laban says, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. And Laban's got to be... And, you know, I'm sure he's just saying, well, okay, that's fine with me. But inside he's thinking, yes! This is the greatest deal I've ever heard in my life. You know, first of all, out of every 1,000 sheep, Jacob's going to get 1 or 2 or maybe 3 out of the deal. You know, this is tremendous. Out of every 1,000 goats, you know, he's going to get, you know, 3 or 4 maybe. This is the greatest deal and that I've ever made in my life, Laban's thinking. You know, and the other thing about it is this. Once you remove the speckled goats and the spotted goats and the discolored sheep from the flock, well, guess what? You don't have the speckled goats and the black sheep and the brown sheep and all the strange genetic makeup animals breeding with the other ones. So what's the chances of getting more speckled spotted animals or brown sheep or it's like having a red-headed girl. And, you know, or a bunch of redheaded people. Well, if you take the redheads out, what's the chance of ever getting another redhead? 0.
So did Jacob go ahead and sign an extension to his contract?
Well, that's exactly right. Jacob signed an extension to the contract. And Laban said, this is absolutely tremendous. Absolutely tremendous, because the dominant feature, you know, is white sheep. The dominant feature is black goats and brown goats and goats without speckles and spots and all that. And so Laban is getting the better end of the deal. Well, so Jacob took all the rarer marked goats and sheep and had his sons take them and separate them from Laban's flock and move them 3 days away from Laban's animals. You see that in verse 35. And he removed them, removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So the speckled and spotted goats and the brown sheep and the goats that had a little bit of white in them and the sheep that had a little brown in them and all that, Jacob's sons took them and he took them off. They took them off 3 days separate. And Jacob stayed with Laban's flocks of normal everyday sheep and goats and tended them. Okay, so everybody knows what's going on here. So Jacob is earning his keep, earning the payment for all the speckled, spotted, brown, and white, and all off-colored animals. So that's where we are. But the story doesn't stop there. Because obviously Jacob is a schemer, and he devises to outwit Laban, and that's exactly what he fixes to do. So both men make this agreement, and they shake hands, and as they turn away from each other, they both must have been just laughing at each other, thinking of each other, I've got the better of the other one. If you were Jacob, Abraham was your granddaddy, Isaac was your daddy, and you were the one who was the recipient of the covenant promises of God. The natural, we here in the year 2013, with looking back, we thought, well, all you have to do is trust in the promises of God and God's providence and He's going to take care of you and let God decide and increase the flock and all that. But Jacob doesn't do that at all. Jacob decides that he is going to scheme and manipulate the outcome of the results of the breeding of the sheep and the goats. Because that's what goats and sheep do, naturally. They're going to breed. And Jacob decides that he can, in fact, by a three-part plan, manipulate the outcome of the breeding of Laban's flock, because he's tending Laban's flock of sheep and goats, and that he can get Laban's sheep and goats to breed and produce speckled, spotted, and grizzled sheep and goats. So what Jacob does is he takes rods of wood and peels the bark in stripes. So he has these striped rods. You understand what I'm saying there? Peels the bark back and striped rods. So they're striped. And then the animals, the female animals, when they would come up to water in the watering troughs, the males would come up behind them, as males would do, the animals, and they would breed with the females. Well, as the females would be there at the watering troughs, Jacob would lay the striped rods down inside the watering troughs so that the females would see the striped rods, and that would produce striped animals. Let's read the verses. Starting in Genesis chapter 30, verse 37. And Jacob, this is part one of Jacob's three-part plan. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut trees and peeled white streaks in them. So he made stripes, in other words, and made the white appear which was in the rods. So he peeled stripes, had striped rods, brown and white striped rods. And he set the rods, which he had peeled, before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. So like I say, he laid them down in the watering troughs, and when they came to drink, the females would be drinking, they'd see these rods, and the males would come up behind them and breed the females, and so the females would be looking at the striped rods, and the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle ring-straked, speckled, and spotted. Amazing. Amazing. So, it seems like it was working. Yeah, Jacob was a schemer. It's like a barber's pole of stripes. Exactly right, Betty. Like a barber's pole. Well, so that was working. But we had to. He had to step up the plan. And so, part two, he put part two of his plan into action. And he took the flock of Laban's animals, and because the his flock was growing of these ring-straked, speckled, and spotted animals, he was getting a bigger and bigger flock of speckled, spotted, and ring-straked animals. What he did was he took Laban's flock and he faced them toward his flock, so they would visually see the striped and speckled and spotted animals, so they would get the idea that when they conceived, they should bear speckled, spotted, and striped animals. If you understand what's going on here. So if the rods didn't give them the idea, they would definitely get the idea by looking at other animals that were speckled, spotted, and striped. And so in verse 40, and Jacob did separate the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring straight, and all the brown in the flocks of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and put them not unto Laban's cattle. So he separated. That's right. He separated the two flocks. Obviously, his flock was separate from Laban's flock, but he faced Laban's flock toward his flock of ring, of speckled, spotted, and striped animals, so that they would visually see, what they should bear when they conceived, and so they would look at themselves and say, well. Well, we're not speckled, spotted, and striped. We should conceive and bear speckled, spotted, and striped animals. And so they did. Well, as they continued to bear speckled, spotted, and striped animals, then part three of the plan. I don't know how many of you know this, but goats and sheep and lots of animals bear twice a year. They mate twice a year, once in the springtime, once in the fall. And it's considered that those who bear in the fall are the strongest animals, because when you bear in the fall, the young have to survive through the coldest part of the year, the wintertime. So Jacob, knowing that, what he would do then is want the ones who were going to mate and bear in the fall to be his animals. Consider those to be the strongest of the animals. The ones in the springtime were going to be the weaker of the animals. So it came to pass, verse 41, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, those who were mating in the fall time to conceive before winter time, that the young would have to live through the fall, that Jacob laid the rod before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods, that they would, of course, then bear the speckled, spotted, and striped animals that would have to live through the winter, that they'd be the strong ones. But when the cattle were feeble, that of course being in the spring, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, but the stronger were Jacob's. So what he's doing is increasing the strength of his own herd and decreasing the strength of the quality of Laban's herd. So he's putting this three-part plan into action, and it's working. It's amazing. So as time goes on, Jacob's accumulating this huge multitude of not only sheep and goats, plus other animals, because of the wealth that he's accumulating. Plus, of course, his sons are he has to hire servants to help his sons, his 11 sons. So you read in verse 43, and the man increased increasingly, exceedingly. So Jacob is increasing exceedingly and had much cattle, of course, that being animals, maid servants and men servants and camels and asses. So over time, over the next 7 years, Jacob flourishes beyond belief. All because he's putting these rods in front of the cattle and they're bearing all these animals that have spots and stripes and speckles and all that. None of the animals that he has are, none of the sheep that he has are pure white sheep. All the goats that he has have white spots and speckles and stripes. None of them are pure white sheep or any of that. So they can't be, you know, nobody can come over and say, well, you stole them from our flock. Well, you read the verses along with me. And as we read them, you would make the assumption reading them that Jacob, by peeling the rods and by setting them in the troughs of water and by the animals seeing the rods and by him facing the animals toward his flock of speckled, spotted, and striped animals, and by putting the rods in front of the stronger animals as they conceived, that Jacob was able to manipulate the conception and manipulate the flock and have them actually bear speckled, spotted, and striped animals. Isn't that the way the verses read? And that would be the assumption that we can conclude. But you and I both know that science does not prove that to be true. I mean, I have chickens at home, and I can take rods, and I can, and you know, they're red with white on their feathers, and I can take speckled, you know, I can take striped rods and put them in front of them, just circle the coop with striped rods, and I can put striped wallpaper up in the coop, and I can put a rooster in there, and not one of the offspring would be striped. Not one. I could put polka dots all over the place, and not one of the chicks would have spots. Not one. So, what really is going on here? Jacob obviously believed that what he was doing was working, because he did it for 7 years and continued to do it, and he prospered exceedingly. The problem is that what he was doing in manipulating the outcome is that he thought that he was able to manipulate the outcome, that God was rewarding him for doing that by putting the rods in and by facing the animals toward the other animals, and so that God was rewarding him for those efforts. But God doesn't reward carnal effort. Paul writes in Romans chapter 8 and verse 5 that they which are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh. And that's exactly what Jacob was minding, was the things of the flesh. He was out to get Laban. He never even considered trusting God for the increase, but rather took things in his own hands and came up with his own plan and said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this strange brew of some kind of magic, laying these rods in front of the sheep and the goats to get them to conceive. And that's what it amounted to. But they that are after the Spirit mind the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. And he was being carnally minded, just as he had been for a long time, for virtually all his life. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God. God had never entered the picture in all of this. For it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be, so that they that are in the flesh cannot please God. Certainly none of this was pleasing to God. The fact of the matter is that he was the recipient of the promises of God simply because of who he was. It doesn't mean that what he was doing was pleasing to God. Just as oftentimes, you know, we are the recipients of the promises of God because of who we are, because of what we have believed. We have trusted the Lord Jesus Christ for the salvation of our souls, for the forgiveness of our sins. So we are the recipients of the promises of God because of who we are, because we are in Christ. Same way Jacob is. But that doesn't mean that we are always pleasing God. Sometimes we're doing the exact opposite. Just like Jacob here setting rods in front of the animals. He's just doing the simplest, stupidest things. And here for 7 years, Jacob is putting rods in front of the animals saying, this is working. Look at everything that's happening because I'm putting these rods in front of the animals. And oftentimes, we're the same way. Putting rods in front of the animals and getting results. And saying, this is working. But the fact of the matter is, we're attributing the results to the wrong thing. We're attributing the results to our own effort, when in fact it has nothing to do with us. Because frankly, to believe that Jacob's techniques worked would to believe that visual impressions would in fact affect the outcome of conception at birth. And that's just not true, is it?
Doesn't work like that.
Doesn't work like that. Because if that was true, you better blindfold your wife before she becomes pregnant. Because otherwise she might give birth to a giraffe. You know? So the only conclusion we can reasonably come to is that Jacob has not prospered because he has pulled one over on Laban. He has not prospered because he has pulled one over on Laban. He has not prospered because he has tricked Laban. There has to be another reason. So we'll get to that in a minute. Meanwhile, we find out in Genesis chapter 31, starting in verse 1, that Laban is not happy anymore. Remember, Laban, when Jacob showed up, was happy as can be to see, just thrilled to death, and ran and threw his arms around Jacob and says, I'm so thrilled to see you. Well, 14 years later, things have changed because money is a strange thing, isn't it? Laban didn't have it when Jacob got there, and now Laban doesn't have it again. Well, it's not as though Jacob has taken anything that Laban earned, because Jacob is the one who brought it to begin with, isn't it? But Laban's not happy because Jacob has prospered and Laban has lost that which he had. Well, Laban's sons, who were previously unmentioned, we didn't know anything about the fact that Laban had sons, whether they were young when Jacob arrived or whether they were unborn when Jacob arrived, we don't know. But now they're old enough to know the fact that Laban's losing his wealth, and Jacob is gaining a lot of wealth, and they're starting to kind of grumble about things too, and they're blaming Jacob about the loss of their father's wealth, and they blame Jacob for it. So, in verse 1, he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. Now, wait a minute. Let's stop there for a minute. What's wrong with that verse? Is that verse, is what they're saying true or not? Remember what Laban said to Jacob. Laban told Jacob, why did Laban, had Laban prospered during the time that Jacob was there? Laban said it was because the Lord has prospered me because you are here. Yeah. Laban, in Genesis 30, verse 27, Laban said unto Jacob, I pray thee, if I found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. Because you are here, the Lord has blessed me. So it's only because you're here that the Lord has blessed me. So if you hadn't been here, the Lord wouldn't have blessed me. So now they're grumping, because if Jacob hadn't shown up, they would have never had anything that was any of this to begin with. Well, now that they're losing it all, they're saying, Jacob is taking it all. Well, guess who it really belonged to in the first place? Was it really Laban's to begin with? No, it was not. And why was it given to Laban? Remember why it was given to Laban anyway. What was the wealth? What was that wealth given to as payment for? Dowry for payment for the daughters. As payment for the daughters. And what's a dowry for? It's for a gift for the daughter and for the children. A dowry is like a savings account that you give to the, that goes with the daughter, that to give to start the family, so that the family has something as they go off on their own. That's what the dowry is for. When a young man shows up and says, "Well, I have a dowry," that means that the family, that the young man and the young woman then have something to start a family with. Well, this 14 years of paying for these young women, these two young women, Leah and Rachel, was for the dowry. Well, that was payment to go into a savings account. That's what the dowry was to be. That was supposed to go to the young women. Keep that in mind. So, he heard the word of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath gotten away, hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Knowing that Laban, so Jacob, knowing that Laban and his sons had become hostile toward him, God intervenes. Now, this is the first time that God says anything to Jacob in over 20 years. You know, we always think about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, when we talk about Abraham, when we study about Abraham, we talked about the length of time between God showing up and actually speaking to Abraham. And it was amazing the lengths of time that went between the appearances of God. And you don't think about it being so long when you think about these guys. But it's been 20 years since God spoke to Jacob at Bethel. 20 years, that's a long time. I mean, you know, God shows up and says something to you, Steve, and you know, you think, well, man, God really likes me, you know, I'll talk to him tomorrow. 20 years is what it's been. So, you find out that the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So that was the instruction. Go back home. Get out of this place and go back home. So, Jacob does not go back to his house or back to his tent. He calls to his wives and he calls them out to the field because he figures that it's probably too dangerous to go back into the presence of Laban and his sons. So he sends for his wives and they come out to the field. Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. And there Jacob tells the story of what's been going on, because obviously Leah and Rachel are ignorant to all the things that have been happening between Jacob and his father-in-law Laban over the course of time. Now, when you tell a story, and yours is the only side of the story, naturally, you're going to put yourself in a good light. And Jacob does too. Jacob, of course, puts himself in the best of light. And he is the victim in this particular circumstance. So, as you read this, naturally, he is going to be the victim. Laban is the bad guy. He is the good guy. He's the guy that did everything to try to work everything out and everything, you know. But, and he was taken advantage of. And he's done everything right. But it just, you know... he's the victim of circumstance, and Laban is the big bad ogre. So in verse 5, Jacob said unto them, I see your father's countenance that is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, which of course isn't true. He's been doing everything he can to take away the flock and get it to his side of the fence. And your father hath deceived me. Of course, there's been deception on both sides of the tent. And changed my wages 10 times. And that might be just a little bit of exaggeration. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ring straight shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring straight. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. So, in other words, God was with me. God was on my side in this, you know. God was against your daddy. He was with me in this whole thing. He saw me as the innocent victim. He knows that I got, you know, I really took the shaft in this whole deal. And in the end, God put it to your father. And no matter what kind of screwing your daddy tried to give to me, God stuck it to him. And of course, he didn't say anything about the rods and everything else that, you know, He says it doesn't matter what kind of deal your daddy tried to make. God stuck it to him and did it to him, and there's no way your daddy could have won. Well, then Jacob says, "I had a dream." As Martin Luther King, "I had a dream." And he tells you about the dream from God. Starting in verse 10 through 13, "And it came to pass at the time that the cow conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leapt upon the cattle." So this is the males jumping upon the females, okay? "The rams which leapt upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see. All the rams which leapt upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where that thou vowed a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return to the land of thy kindred." Now, does anybody see anything in that dream? Jacob, of course, sees that dream as a directive from God to go back home. He also sees that dream as justification for everything that's gone on. Because Jacob has spent the last 7 years of his life taking those rods and peeling the bark off of them and throwing the rods in the troughs and getting the cattle to bear ringstrake, grizzled, and spotted animals. And the dream justifies it all because God showed him that that it was all good. But did you see anything in that dream . The fact of the matter is that Jacob was under the impression and is still under the impression that he manipulated the outcome of those animals by taking the stakes and peeling the bark off of them and throwing the rods in the troughs. And by taking the animals and facing them toward the flock of spotted and striped animals, and taking the strongest animals and putting the rods in the troughs of just the strongest animals. He's under the impression that by his own works, he was able to manipulate the outcome of the conception of the mating and of the animals. But the fact of the matter is this. When we read in verse 10, what God shows him is that the rams which leap upon the cattle were in fact ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. And again, the angel of God spake unto Jacob in a dream and points out to him, he says, "Now lift up your eyes and see. Look and see what's really going on, Jacob. All the rams which leapt upon the cattle are ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. It is God that is doing the work, not Jacob. Jacob has nothing to do with what's going on as far as producing ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled cattle. It's all the work of God. God is manipulating the outcome. God can take two white sheep and produce a black sheep, produce a green sheep, produce a purple sheep. God can take two animals and produce anything he wants. Jacob has nothing to do with it. So God is manipulating the outcome of the mating of the animals, not Jacob. And Jacob completely misses that. So God worked in spite of Jacob, not because of him, which he often does with us. He works in spite of us, not because of us. Oftentimes we think that what we're doing is working, and God works in spite of what we're doing, not because of what we're doing. To finish up, Leah and Rachel realize that their father has spent and lost the dowry, their dowry. Their dowry was the increased flock that Jacob had gotten through the blessing of God. I guess Laban had gotten because Jacob had been there through the blessing of God. Remember, a dowry was for the girls. A dowry was to be kept by the father to give to the girls when they got married, so that there would be a gift to the girls as they left the home. But Leah and Rachel realized that their father has lost that dowry, but that God, in fact, has recovered it for them. Because Laban would have never let go of it. He would never have given it to them. God has gotten it for them. So in Genesis chapter 31, verses 14 through 16, and Rachel and Leah answered and said unto Jacob, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. So those two were on board with Jacob and with God in leaving their father's house and on to the land which God had told them to get to. And we'll find out more about that in the next lesson.